content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. And our guest today is Jay Wilkins. Morning, Jay.
Good morning.
Since Monday was Veterans Day, Jay, I'm gonna thank you for your service.
Thank you. Thank you for the recognition.
Well, we can get it in here. Jay has a really interesting background. We might need to have him back here about five times. But Jay has a career with the North Carolina National Guard. And, you know, people hear about the National Guard. If they're not in the military, they might not really know what that means. Just give us a sentence or two about what the National Guard is.
Well, the National Guard in every state has two real missions. One is to the governor for the state for hurricanes and ice storms and floods and things of that nature. And the other one is federal active duty, where they're mobilized, they become federal troops, and they actually deploy around the world to various locations. And at any point in time, the state of North Carolina has people in the mobilization mode.
Mm-hmm. How did you come about joining the National Guard?
As it turned out, I had put in an application back in the early 70s to get in and wanted to get in. Did not think I would get an opportunity to do so, but the national draft took place, and I had number 17, so there was a high probability I was going to get drafted.
I remember those days.
And a stroke of luck, they had a cancellation in the National Guard program, so I got in the National Guard on Monday. And on Wednesday of that week, I got a call from the Federal Reserve saying, or Federal Military saying, you need to report for duty this particular day and get a physical and prepare for mobilization and at the basic training as well as advanced classes. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have to do that because I was already physically online with the National Guard.
Mm-hmm. Now you say federal. What term did you say about federal?
It was a regular, it was as number 17, my number was coming up. It had been drawn, and they were they were bringing people in to prepare them to go to active duty.
I see.
In the Army in this particular case.
And so what happened next?
Got in the National Guard, actually went to the program, went off and became a machinist as a general rule. And the National Guard was looking for officers, and I volunteered to go to officer's class. Ended up actually doing so, came back as a aviator, and as they changed the branch and created the aviation branch, I was able to go off to flight school and came back as a Huey pilot, and over the years matured into the, I had 10 hours in the Cobra, and then they did away with the Cobra. They were going with the Apache, so we went to the 864, and so I got into the Apache with several hundred hours of that and greatly appreciated it because it was about $4,000 an hour to fly the Apache.
And, folks, that's a thrill ride you can't buy.
True.
So, Jay, where'd you go to flight training?
Fort Rucker, Alabama. They consolidated from Texas. Everything went out to Fort Rucker, so you did your basic training. And everybody's got their gray hairs from doing basic training. I had some engine failure, so one of the instructors, well, not a failure, but it was not steady. So one of the instructors got in there, flew me up in the air, and was rolling the throttle on and off and snatching me around inside the cockpit. And I was bracing myself for crash, and we landed safely. He said, I got the problems with the engine cleaning itself out like it should, so you can fly it safely now. So
that's
where I got gray hair today, was from things like that.
Now, was that, did you have to do auto rotation down or?
Routinely, you did auto rotations. Back in that particular day with the Hueys, they had big steel plates on the bottom of them. You would normally go into a retired airport runway somewhere. You wouldn't actually go out on an active course, but you would slide down, and at night you would see sparks flying everywhere where the steel railings were being peeled off by the asphalt and concrete driveways or landing strips that we had.
I got to be in an Air Force helicopter while they were practicing auto rotations. And they said, do you want to get off or stay with us? I'll stay with you. That's quite a thrill ride.
Now, well, in the real world, you would practice this at altitude, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 feet, when you're not at a training exercise. And the opportunity would be to pick out a spot out of the tree line in a field somewhere where you could come down. And in theory, you would want to touch down at 3 or 4 or 5 miles an hour to minimize your forward airspeed. So you practice it in real world. But then when you did it out in the open environment, you never really touched down unless it was a true engine failure.
Mm-hmm. So where'd you go next? Or did you go to Vietnam?
Did not. I actually never went to Vietnam, although I volunteered over the 30-some years that I was in the reserves in the National Guard for active duty assignments. I actually did some work down at Fort Bragg when we had our first overseas deployment, and there was some thought that I was going to go over and represent the 82nd as they went over, but because I was a reservist rather than an active guy, didn't get to do that. But we raised security issues that the active duty took missions on, like additional aircraft load, what would an Apache fire, and basically we had 2 or 3 days worth of munition for an Apache battalion if they were in true combat situations, and to back up with more munitions was something that the 82nd adapted from comments that we made in observing what was online and what could be available in a very distressed situation. Mm-hmm. Distress never occurred, so we didn't need that type of munitions, but it was one never knows what might happen. Better be prepared rather than trying to recover.
Now, to go to flight school, you had a degree at that point, right?
You had to have a college degree.
Where did you get your degree?
Well, I graduated from two colleges with about 30 days of each other, Lewisburg and Campbell. And I didn't take my religious class at Lewisburg, but I did take it at Campbell, and they transferred them back together. I took it at Lewisburg and they sent it back together. So I got two diplomas for a 2-year degree and a 4-year degree. Both of them within about 30 days of each other back in 1970.
Uh-huh. So then where are some of the places you were assigned as a helicopter pilot?
Well, most of it was in the National Guard, and so we were assigned. They had three locations: Kinston, Raleigh were the two main sites, and then in the western part of the state, we had another lift company back out in that area. And so we did a lot of that type work. We initiated some programs that became somewhat national in the sense we had some marijuana issues with a child of one of our leaders in the military. And so we learned to identify marijuana plants. And it was a requirement that 5 or so hours out of every flight year, we went out looking for this particular color style of plant. Mm-hmm. And we did that and reported it, and it became a national event. The federal government actually expanded on this, and it was a federal program, and it still is ongoing at this time to some degree. But it was,
how about that?
It was started with, it's tough to say you find millions of dollars worth of plants over any given week or so, and that was not an uncommon thing with the common growing in a variety of environments.
So what'd you do after flying the helicopters?
Well, the work that I did inside the military was with the breakup of the USSR, the Soviet Union. They had 15 states, including the Soviet Union, and they divided the states up according to different, they divided the countries up according to different states. Mm-hmm. And North Carolina ended up with the Republic of Moldova because they were both very agriculturally background. And because of that, we went over there, and I did the third tour in Moldova, and it was a 1-year tour. With 2 or 3 subcontract military guys, as well as 3 or 4 local employees that you hired for translation and things of that nature. And while we were there, the federal government rolled us over from a 1-year tour to a 2-year tour. So even though the military wanted someone else to come in, the ambassador wrote a letter to the UCOM command and said that we like who this guy is and what he's done in a variety of different areas, and so we'd like for him to stay for the additional 2 years. And obviously with an ambassadorial outreach, which means to some degree it's a presidential outreach, her wishes were delivered, and my family got to come over. My daughter got to do her sophomore and junior year of high school in London, England, which was a federally funded site over there that brought people in from all over the world that had high school age kids, and they didn't have high school. They didn't have U.S. high school facilities in the countries that they were serving in.
So she said, "We want Jay," and here you are.
And it worked. It worked really well.
That must have been a fascinating experience.
Well, our ambassador was there for a full 2 years. One of the big things they used me for is that being an aviator, they were building a medical facility over there, and Moldova was one of the three main medical facilities inside of the USSR, but it had greatly deteriorated over time. And the University of Virginia was building some medical facilities over there, and they were having extreme problems getting equipment in at the airport. They were wanting bribes to unload stuff from the airplanes and to bring it in. And so I put on a flight suit and went over there, and I would hate to say it, but for a bottle of wine or a light gesture, I was able to get a lot of things happen at a much more reasonable rate than what was being enhanced on the government as we were trying to do things to enhance the health of the individuals in Moldova.
Mm-hmm. Now, do we North Carolina, still have that relationship with Moldova?
Well, we do. When it was originally set up, the programs were designed to be five-year programs, and they would be a situational awareness. You would do an outreach, and then it would go away. These were assigned to states, and when they tried to break up the first five-year tour, which happened while I was over there, the governor of the state made U.S. government outreach, and now Moldova is celebrating their 20th year this year. In fact, on Memorial Day, I actually have Monday, I actually have an interview with a representative from Moldova who are creating a 20-year history of what we've done, and this is common. What started out with 14 states is now up to 72 around the world. So North Carolina,
countries,
and we actually have an African country that North Carolina National Guard has a relationship with as well.
So all the states are divided up. The U.S. states are matched up with these 72 countries.
That's correct. And some of them with two countries.
Yeah. And I think a lot of civilians don't understand or realize how important that is.
I don't think they do. And it's a concept that the enhancement in the existing governments are things that the .military can do things that the .gov and .com mm-hmm. really can't do. And in one particular instance, when I was over there for one of my first years, we had a religious outreach that had gone into a child center, and they didn't have the watering systems for showers and things of that nature. It's very limited. And they did thousands and thousands of dollars worth of work and numerous man hours putting it together, but they didn't have the funding for a pump. So me taking collections from people when they were leaving the country to go back and do outreach for the Moldovan U.S. influence on Moldova, I was able to collect money from them. We bought the $300 or $400 pump and put it in, and now the showers work, so they had hot water and cold water, and it was just a very minor outreach, and this has expanded to a lot of different areas over the time that I was there and my followers who are still there today.
And who were you collecting the money from?
Normally, they were from people that were leaving the country, and they had currency left over.
You mean like Americans?
Americans that were over there.
So sometimes with the big bureaucracies, it got down to Jay Wilkins using his head and wits and helping them out by doing something like a community, you know, a collection you do for a school, high school.
Well, we did that, and is an expansion from that. When my wife came over, one of the tours that she took with the ambassador was to a operations center, and this particular case was for women, and it was a breast cancer removal type facility, and it was in terrible shape. And at the ambassador's request, she created a fundraising event and raised over $7,000 on the one event, and it's still ongoing to this date to help raise money for medical issues that are taking place in the Republic of Moldova. Mm-hmm. Very well-intelligent group of people, but terrible economic outreach with huge international criminal activities running the biggest part of the country. And it was true then. It's even truer today than it was back in 2001, 2003.
That's unfortunate and something we take for granted in the U.S. Having law and order is the backbone of the democracy.
And we're fortunate in the world when you look at that with a lot of other countries.
Now, you talk about outreach. Take me on the ground. Tell me what one of those outreaches looks like.
Outreach in a political sense is that the Soviet Republic has been very influential in what goes on. They're controlling elections. We actually would monitor elections, and it was not uncommon to have a husband walk in with a written ballot, and he happened to have his wife's ballot with him at the same time. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the things that we would give situational awareness to election authorities, both in the government as well as with the embassy, so that there was mechanisms could be employed to minimize that, because we certainly don't do that over here in America. Mm-hmm. And we would like to deliver a lot of our ways of effectively and honestly electing people to office. And even though North Carolina has had their own little issues here lately, we're moving in the right direction, and that's where we are in a general sense with what we're doing overseas.
Mm-hmm. And it strikes me, too, of how much the military and the State Department work together. I don't think the average citizen thinks of it like that.
They really don't. I say they really don't. The outreach, frequently it's unique when I make a comment about having served over there and served under the military, but at the Department of State's recommendation, this program be set up, and it's extended for such a period of time. But there is outreach. The Secretary of State for North Carolina, Ms. Elaine Marshall, has headed this program up since I was over there in 2001 and is still working in it, so she's very involved with what's gone on. Made dozens of trips over there, been recognized by the existing government, as well as some other activities we have going on. There's a dental activity that sends two or three groups over there to go to the children's retainment centers, and they'll do dental work for them. This guy happens to be Jewish, and he does all of the Jewish. They got two Jewish areas that the Jewish children are in that are a part of others, but he goes to those specifically, and other outreach from that. And with that particular environment, there is recognition both here in the USA as well as in Moldova for appreciation for helping their children.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we got into was the three-shot series for measles, mumps, and MMR. MMR is a common phrase for it. But that was affecting about 50% of the children in the nurse in the retirement, in the, I don't want to say nursing homes, but it was the kids' stayovers. And what happened was about one-third of them were real, but the economic environment was so poor that in the wintertime, the families would increase by about two-thirds the number of people in these children's homes, because they couldn't afford to keep their houses warm enough in the winter to keep their children alive. So this was a safety feature on their part. So winters were in the retirement center, the kids' homes, and in the winters, they ended up staying there the entire time, fed by state-funded efforts and things that we were doing as well. And then summertime, they'd go back home, and they were part of their families. They work in the fields and do the things that were physically productive in creating a crop that would survive with their family.
Mm-hmm.
But again, over 50% of these kids that were in those things, we inoculated them because of the MMR problem, which could be life-threatening in addition to just a serious health issue.
Take me back to Mount Olive and Jay Wilkins growing up.
Well,
if you can think back that far.
If you go back that far, you can remember there's a place over there called Mount Olive Pickle Company.
Yes.
And my grandfather.
At the corner of
Cucumber and Vine.
And
that was my grandfather was a general practitioner in Mount Olive, and he and a dozen other people started Mount Olive Pickle Company up.
Really?
91, 92 years ago now. They just had their 90th anniversary a couple of years back. But part of what used to be our cow pasture is now part of Mount Olive Pickle Company. So we were across the railroad tracks from the pickle plant and still have great interest in what they're doing. And it's not uncommon that I have, since people overseas don't know about it, I've frequently shipped packages of Mount Olive pickles to the ambassador in our country of Moldova so that they know that the North Carolina link there is still very real.
We're thinking about them.
Thinking about them.
That is a very good marketing tool and also a good way to keep in touch with them.
It is, and it's a basic program that we have a lot that's going on, and there's just with the threat that's going on around the world, there's a positive reach to it. Mm-hmm. And the relationship with Moldova through the state of North Carolina and Department of Defense and Department of State is a growing relationship around the world. So there's the outreach portion of the various states and the commitments that they make as they go around. This isn't just a political event.
And this is going on with 72 other countries. I think that's amazing.
It truly is.
It's a good thing. That's the goodness of the United States citizens and generosity as well. Are you familiar with any of the other countries?
Visited several of them in military environments. I think I mentioned in my mind, I keep remembering that we got to go to the northern island of Japan as part of a military commitment over there. The issue was that a country in the Soviet Socialist Republic, this is while they were still intact, had broken up and was threatening to attack the northern island of Japan, which is where they held the Olympics. So we got to see the places that the Olympics were done back in the 70s over there. And as an Apache guy, our answer to everything was to blow it up and tear it up. but the domestic population said, you can't block our ports. That's where we make our living, is being able to send the ships in and out. So we need to think of another plan to stop them, but not stop them so that you basically block the highway around here. There you block the waterway so they can't get their commercial activities in and out of the northern island of Japan. So it was greatly appreciated, and we did a lot of work over there.
Flying Apaches over there?
No, we were on the ground.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And 3 or 4 feet of snow the whole time we were over there. And everybody, if they went jogging, they had cleats on the bottom of their tennis shoes when they were running around. And we were doing night presentations, and the one-star general that was in control of it came in over one morning about 2 or 3 in the morning. And we had heated up some hot food, and he hadn't had anything hot in some period of time, so he became very popular at 1 or 2 in the morning, come over and get something hot to drink and hot to eat. And while we were there, we realized you could take a cup of coffee and walk outside, and it was minus 20 or 30 degrees, throw it up in the air, and it would literally either be ice cubes or evaporated by the time it hit the ground. And that was a gesture of appreciation for being in North Carolina. It's much more routine down here than it was over there in that environment.
We don't think about Japan being that cold, but it goes far north.
This is the northern island of Japan. It's not mainland.
And how much time did you spend there?
We spent 8 days over there. And again, it was a international relationship. This was a deployment of what would have been military reserves, but we do practice as an aviator guy. We did a lot of German activities, a lot of trips back over there, planning different events that were taking place. And going
social
to,
events or no, military
these
events?
These were military events. Military. These were late night Apache flights where you're looking at the middle of the night. That's the least threat at that particular time. With the visibility and the ranges of the Apaches, you could go over and make defensive or offensive operations as the local leadership requested. And we were implementation of local leadership other than on searches, since you have night vision goggles that can literally your left eye is about 4 or 5 feet below you and about 14 feet out in front of you. So if you're hovering through the woods, your left eye sees a tree pass by, and then about a second or two later your right eye sees the same tree pass by again.
Okay.
It's just that must just disorientation between the left eye is out front and the right eye is in the real world. So you're reading the dashboard with your right eye. So interesting.
And you were flying. You were doing your pilot.
That was pilot duties. Training. We did not have this over, as I said, when we went to Japan. It was not a tactical issue. It was a theoretical paper issue.
I was trying to get to if you flew the Apache or the what's the current state of the gunship?
Well, the Apache is I flew the Alpha model Apache, which was when it first came out. I think they're up to Delta Echo now, multi-generations. Now they have the little bulb up on top where you can go over, and one aircraft with that bulb pops down and goes around and tells the other three aircraft where their targets are. So it's a real outreach. It comes in, and it's great technology. And back then, to launch a Hellfire was considered a moderate-priced Mercedes-Benz. Is the cost of it. And now you can carry 16 of them, and they're much more expensive now than they were then. They're much more sophisticated as well. Because you also have, if you're ground troops and you have the laser coordination with your pilots, with about a 4 or 5 mile range with the existing weapons from the aircraft, with the proper laser code, the soldier on the ground can laser that at the proper time with coordination, even out another 5 or 6 miles. So
laser designation.
Laser designation. And the question was frequently, did you want it in the front window or the front door when it hit the house type thing? So very precise.
That's the kind of capability we have. And that also lends, just to put in a little rah-rah for the military, that also speaks to the how careful they are to just hit the target, just hit the bad guys and try to avoid civilians, and to a great extent do. Is that true?
Very much so. And it's an explosion, but that is one of the more accurate weapons that we fire, because it's designed for pinpoint design. It's not a rocket that shoots in a general area. It's a hellfire. It's a missile.
Goes right to a specific point.
Yeah.
And the Air Force's AC-130 gunship has similar capabilities. Jay, what kind of things influenced your life? Give you an easy question.
Well, grew up on a farm. We started off with chickens, and I think we started off with a few thousand chickens. We ended up with almost 200,000 chickens. So I was into sales, public relationships as a part-time military person initially, and went from that to the idea that they were expanding military organizations. The state of North Carolina, because its proximity to Fort Bragg, it grew usually earlier than other states as we went through different areas, and it was a great outreach to get involved with the Fort Bragg and the things that they've done down there. As I mentioned earlier, I worked with them extensively on several occasions. We coordinated with them physically as well as on paperwork, and Fort Bragg would support missions, and I was able to provide, in Kinston, we provided the old World War II airfield out there. We provided a refueling strip for the active duty forces that were taking place because they had problems on the coastline with being able to refuel, and just you accommodate where you can and do what you can. It was a real outreach and appreciated by the 06 that was in command.
And an 06 is a full colonel.
Full colonel in the Army.
And that's what Jay
is. He'll be a captain in the Navy, I think.
I save that to the end. Jay is a full colonel. And Jay wouldn't like me saying this, but he is an American hero. He really is. And it's people like this that represent our country around the world. Jay, thank you so much for being on Salute a Veteran Every Day. We've enjoyed having you here.
Well, it's a great privilege and an honor to be able to do the outreach of it's been a wonderful program and is ongoing and will continue to expand as the issues around the world develop.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. Address any comments or questions to us at 919-832-5138. I'm Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time.